According to the World Economic Forum, despite the rising demand for AI skills, only half of workers have access to adequate AI training opportunities today. To help ensure AI's benefits are widely shared, Google.org has launched a $75 million AI Opportunity Fund. Through this fund, Google.org will support nonprofit, education, and other sectors to train Americans of all backgrounds and provide them with AI skills at no cost. To learn more, visit google.org.
Good morning, I'm Anna Palmer, and welcome to a special edition of The Daily Punch. This is the fourth edition of a four-part special series as part of our project, The AI Impact, in partnership with Google. Every other week, I've been joined by a member of our editorial team who has dug into specific areas from cybersecurity to healthcare and science about how AI is impacting that space. I'm thrilled to be joined this morning by Punchbowl News reporter Max Cohn. Today, we are going to be chatting about what's happening when it comes to education and workforce and AI. Max, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right, let's get right to it. Can you walk us through the state of play when it comes to education and workforce and AI in Washington?
Sure. Obviously, as you know, AI is a very quickly emerging field. And from my conversations with staffers and people in the nonprofit sector, there's really a frustration that the technology is just progressing so much faster than what Congress is doing. There are a number of legislative proposals on the table, but what we've seen, these proposals are mainly just defining strategies, you know, define key terms. Here's going to be the framework to study AI and how it impacts the workforce, and not a lot of actual action items. So I guess, for instance, one example, you know, Lisa Blunt Rochester is a big leader in this space. She has a jobs, future jobs initiative. And one of the bills in her package is authorizing the National Science Foundation and the Department of Labor to study the impacts of AI on workers. That's a big concern among members, right? Is, you know, will this displace jobs? How will this affect my constituents? But that kind of approach, you know, looking at the study, you know, we'll talk about this later, but the nonprofit sector is like, hey, well, Congress might give us a really great study, really great report of something that happened 3 years ago.
Yeah, it's always the challenge in Washington of, especially around technology. We've seen it time and time again where technology is just moving so much faster than Congress and Washington do. It kind of, as always, kind of playing catch up. One of the interesting things you dive into is the idea of an expert shortage and what that means. What does that look like?
For sure. So the federal government, you know, the Biden administration has done a pretty big rollout of their AI executive order. And one of the key parts of this executive order is we need to make sure the federal government is hiring AI experts to consult on how best the government should use AI and a number of other issues throughout all the agencies. But the issue they're running into is often, you know, the AI field in the private sector is so well funded. It's growing so quickly, as we were talking about. They have to compete against salaries, which really the federal government, you know, can't compete with in terms of companies like OpenAI, right? Mm-hmm. So that's one issue, you know, I write about it in the piece, is that a number of the working groups on the Hill are saying, we want a strategy from the federal government on how you're going to compete given this, you know, such an intense competition for jobs.
So what's interesting in reading your piece, in particular on the education and workforce area, and the focus in Washington right now, is there's a lot of focus by lawmakers and the White House about making sure that this goes kind of beyond just the typical tech hubs, right? It shouldn't just be AI in Silicon Valley, AI in Boston. How are folks on the Hill thinking about making sure that there's a broader workforce preparedness effort for the changes AI is going to be making across industries?
Yeah, it's a great point. You know, we see a lot of the, you know, almost CHIPS funding portion, which is like, hey, let's have these National Science Foundation centers in different parts across the country, not just in the major hubs where the jobs normally flow to. Another big thing that's talked about among proponents of, you know, AI workforce is we need to have the Affordable Connectivity Program reauthorized. The rural Americans, who are often areas where the broadband is not as strong as the urban areas, the ACP program, which is actually expired in late April, that program is key. So we see in these conversations, not only is it looking at AI in the workforce, it's connectivity, broadband access, the wider host of things, because you can't use AI without internet. You know, you can't get these job training benefits without access to broadband.
As part of each of these deep dives, we are interviewing experts, lawmakers, people from the administration, and more to get a sense of what's happening in their field. You spoke with HopeWorks CEO Dan Roten, the CEO of a New Jersey-based job training nonprofit. Tell us a little bit about how he's approaching AI in his role of training underprivileged young adults entering the workforce.
What Roten said to me was, look, the kids they work with in Camden, New Jersey, you know, face mental health challenges, housing challenges, and most of all, educational challenges. And what his organization, HopeWorks, sees is using AI to upskill these young Americans, age 17 to 27, AI can level the playing field against their peers who might have grown up in a higher socioeconomic class and have access to better educational opportunities, especially in the field of tech and coding. He says if you use AI to help train the people at HopeWorks, they can turn in from an entry-level employee to someone almost equivalent to 10 years of experience because the AI is so good at teaching and refining exactly what the students need to learn. So he thinks they can level the playing field.
So we often kind of have this inside-outside mindset here at Punchbowl News where we focus so much on kind of Congress and what's happening or frankly not happening, but love to talk to people who are on the ground, someone like Dan, who is kind of in the trenches, as if you will, kind of doing the work. What does Dan Roten want to see Washington do?
It's something we hear a lot from our private sector friends who talk to us at Punchbowl News is that we need to have regulation. We need to have some sort of a roadmap. That's what they're crying out for, especially in HopeWorks, is look, AI is moving so quickly. We want to make sure we're not, you know, falling afoul of the rules. He termed it the Wild West. And all they want is, what he said, is regulation to make sure they're on the right track. Another aspect he said is, you know, we need to look at what AI is doing now and learn our lessons from how we regulate the internet. And he said at the beginning of the internet age, there wasn't a lot of regulation. Big companies like Amazon propped up and benefited Amazon. What Dan told me is we want more equitable regulation of AI, so it's not just a couple of big companies cropping up. It can maybe help the nonprofit sector more.
Like all things at Punchbowl News, you wanted to ground this project with what might actually be able to happen on the legislative front. There have been a ton of different proposals when it comes to AI. You alluded to Lisa Blunt Rochester and some of the work that she has done. Tell us a bit more about the AI legislative pipeline as it relates to education and workforce.
So everyone basically agrees that nothing will move before the November elections. Of course, we're going to head out into campaign season. And in just this environment in Washington, it's quite difficult to move anything. That being said, I think it's interesting to note there are a lot of bipartisan efforts happening. The Blunt Rochester plan is a bipartisan package. And in the bill sheet we were talking about with authorizing a study that has representatives, Republicans from Oregon, like Lori Chavez de Rima, Republicans from New York, like Andrew Garbarino, as well as a Democrat from Florida, Darren Soto. In the Senate side, what we're looking at is Republican Eric Schmidt, Democrat Gary Peters have a bill out which would create a national strategy modeled after the NIST framework just to define key terms in AI. And its goal is to make sure the workforce is fluent in AI and other emerging technologies. That's another nonpartisan, bipartisan plan, which, you know, seems like it could garner, it already is garnering support. But just at the moment, you know, as we've heard a lot through this series, you know, we're looking at the Farm Bill, we're looking at FAA, we're looking at APROPS. AI is not quite top of mind in legislators' minds right now.
All right, we're going to leave it there, Max. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me about your recent deep dive on AI and education and workforce as part of our AI Impact platform in partnership with Google.
Now I'd like to welcome Mark Osakowitz to the podcast as part of our sponsor programming. Mark, thanks so much for joining me this morning. You are Vice President of Government Affairs and Public Policy for the U.S. and Canada at Google. And you're joining us as part of our four-part series, The AI Impact. Over the past several weeks, we've been doing deep dives into different policy areas from healthcare and science to cybersecurity and small business to this week's focus, education. Mark, we're going to talk about education in the workforce. Can you talk a bit about how Google is preparing workers with training programs and upskilling?
Well, first of all, Anna, thanks for having me. This is a great topic. You know, the opportunities in AI are going to be enormous. And as you and I have discussed before, AI has been in our products for many, many years now. If you're using Google Search or you're using Maps or you're using Translate, all of these things are in our products. AI totally fits with our mission to make the world's information universally available and useful. And the upside in terms of the economy over the next several years and beyond are enormous. McKinsey predicts $18 to $25 trillion added to the global economy. That's like adding an entire U.S. economy to the global economy. So it's really exciting. But a big part of the challenge is having a workforce that's ready for these new opportunities. So last Friday, I was in Virginia with Governor Glenn Youngkin and our President and Chief Investment Officer, Ruth Porat. We announced two new programs, which I'm happy to get into. One is a course called AI Essentials. Another is called the AI Opportunity Fund, both of which will give increased access to people to start to have the skills they'll need for the jobs of tomorrow. And we're really excited about it.
Yeah, so why don't we dive right in there? You made this big investment, millions of dollars, that is really about training, you know, not just the Google worker, but people from a variety of different backgrounds, right?
That's exactly right. So this AI Essentials course, it's a 10-hour course. It's available on Coursera. It's $49 on Coursera and other platforms, and it's going to start to give people skills that they can use. Maybe it's organizing your inbox. Maybe it's helping you brainstorm on some new ideas. Maybe it's marketing a new product, but it will start to give people some skills and know how to use these things, how to write the right prompts into generative AI. And it's low cost and doesn't take much time. In addition to that, we announced a $75 million through Google.org, our philanthropy, a $75 million program called AI, the AI Opportunity Fund. And what that's going to do is through groups that represent military families and veterans and people in rural areas and government workers, is take the core of that class, AI Essentials, make it free, and then offer some wraparound services too. So if you're a military family or a government worker, for free, you could take this. Maybe we'll also throw in how to write a resume that has something to do with it, maybe other job counseling services. And so those are the kind of things we'll be able to do. Our first two grantees are Goodwill and the Institute for Military Families, Veterans and Military Families. And they are going to train thousands of people, again, using AI Essentials and some wraparound services. And this is just the start. And we're really, really excited to do it.
When you think about that, oftentimes people talk about the risks or concerns around AI. But I feel like when in our conversations, you really talk about the opportunity agenda for AI and the importance of focusing on these opportunities as well as mitigating the risks. How do you all approach that?
Well, I think you're right to frame it that way, because I really think it's both. We've said repeatedly we need to approach AI. It needs to be bold and responsible, and it needs to be both. We need to have innovation and guardrails. We're really leaning into the innovation because the competition out there in the world is really strong, and the opportunities, as I said on the economic statistic I cited before, is so high. And it's not just about statistic. It's about the kinds of things we can do for people to have a tutor and basically a little computer in their pocket, and the healthcare and the cancer screening that AI is capable of. The opportunities are enormous. So we're really trying to lean into that and make it so that it's helpful for everyone. On the other hand, people do want guardrails, and we do hear that, and we're leaning into that. We were one of the first four companies to sign on to the president's voluntary commitments that have to do with safety and security and trustworthiness. And we want to do all that. And we want to make sure people know that it's safe and guardrails and doesn't have discrimination and bias. But to do those things, to do it right, especially in a world where, the United States is not the only one who gets a say in how this plays out, we're going to have to do both bold and responsible, innovation and guardrails. And that's how we're thinking about it.
It was interesting. I spoke with Kent Walker, an executive at Google, in an in-person conversation. He talked a lot about the innovation race, right? And that it's really important that the U.S. leads here, not only in kind of getting to be the first into market, but also kind of in deployment thereafter. How has that landed in Washington? Your job is obviously kind of making and convincing lawmakers that they should be taking some proactive steps, where it kind of D.C.'s typically takes a while to catch up to technology. How receptive has the Hill been to this message?
Well, we've been deeply engaged, and we really appreciate that everyone's listening. I know in that same event where you talked to Kent Walker, you talked to Senator Round, Senator Schumer, Senator Young, and Senator Heinrich have had this great AI fora in the Senate. The House has a similar process. We've been deeply engaged, and I think everyone's being thoughtful. I think, as you your question suggests, these are early days. We have a ways to go. We're trying to explain that we think the best model is sort of a risk-based model, that the AI that gets used when maybe you ask what's the best pizza near me is not the same AI application as might be used for a self-driving car, or that the FDA might be concerned about. And so we want a risk-based approach where maybe the folks at NIST who have some expertise can be the hub, and the spokes can be the individual agencies. But we're talking through that, as opposed to, you know, one brand new agency. So as you know so well, the Hill, it's early days. People are still learning. To their credit, they're trying to learn, and there are lots of different ideas. And we are deeply, deeply engaged in this.
Talk a little bit about kind of that public-private sector, because in speaking with Senator Rounds, he said, you know, that partnership is going to be essential. Maybe it's an arm's length. It's not necessarily, you know, so close, but that you're going to need to have both in order for this to be successful.
Well, I think you're going to have public-private sector. You're going to have other stakeholders, nonprofits. There's going to be a lot of voices in this thing that will uphold both sides of it, the bold and the responsible. And I think in terms of the research and development for this, I think the private sector has a huge role. If you look at us and several other companies deeply, deeply investing in this, I think we're going to need to work together on things like the National AI Research Resource, which is going to be this essentially this consortium of data and compute that maybe small business and researchers can have access to. That is not going to be able to get done. That's in a bill that we're already supporting. I think that's called the Create AI Act. That's going to have to require some private sector, public-private partnerships. Things like that, I think, will be essential. And, you know, so far the dialogue has been quite good.
All right, one last question here before I let you run. What's the one thing that you hope? Our audience is a lot of Hill staffers. It's members of Congress, advocates, people that are really engaged in Washington and are certainly, if not in Washington, are really watching what is happening. What's the one thing you want folks to kind of take away for where Google is focused on AI and the future of AI?
Well, one is the balance I talked about, bold and responsible, innovation and guardrails. Also, I would just encourage your listeners to look into some of these early adoptions of AI and the work it can do. It's exciting. The work that our cloud division is doing with Bayer, a very old and reputable drug company, on drug discoveries. And again, as I said before, on different kinds of cancer screening. There's so much going on. There's so many possibilities in education. When I just look at what Google Translate could do, when I look at how this potentially could help small businesses, so I think people should dig deeper in the applications, because their constituents can make use of those applications. And also, some of our competitors can also get there first. So I think it's a good way to think of AI. It's a little bit less theoretical. It's looking at medicine and transportation and education and seeing how this could be helpful. And as a general purpose technology, just like electricity's were and the steam engine was, this is something that really can make a great leap in terms of productivity. But to take it beyond the numbers and see how it's really going to help, I think is worthwhile. What I would have wanted to do when I was a congressional staffer is, how's this really going to make a difference in places around the country?
All right, Mark, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. As always, thank you so much for listening to the Daily Punch. We have a 4-part series, The AI Impact, that you can check out on our homepage at punchbowl.news. Again, thank you for Google and their partnership. Have a great day and stay safe, everybody.